Nagaishimas. Welcome to Cliff's Wujo. A Wujo is a place where the Wujo arts are practiced, as a dojo is a place in which the martial arts are practiced. The Wuwu arts are all things not allowed in mainstream media. Wuwu is all talk not fit for polite discussion. Wuwu is the other half of what makes us human. Today is March 16th, and the discussion today is about meditation. This talk has some discussions about meditative practices near its end. If you're listening to these, they may trigger them, so don't listen to this this discourse while you're driving. Whether you're operating cars, trucks, automobiles, airplanes, or spaceships, it's probably not a good idea to do that in a meditative state. This particular discourse won't really approach meditation the way that most training schools or books do. We're going to start from the other end, that is to say, from the ultimate goal of meditation, and work our way back towards the process. So meditation really is not, as people may think, intended to produce effects here in the materium. The actual goal of meditation, at least for men, I can't speak to women, but for men, the goal of meditation is to develop ki power and then to be able to compress that ki power into an altered form that is actually able to be carried beyond death. The point of carrying that energy beyond death is that it allows you a certain level of freedom and influence in the bardo on the other side of dying. And you can do things there that you wouldn't be able to otherwise. So, leaving that aside for the moment, that truly is the goal of meditation. If you go to the ancient Taoist and yogic texts, you start digging in, doing some research and reading, and you do the validation in some of the books that have no names, as they say, and you really look at it, you'll find, and even in some of the more exposed books, like the Hui Ming Ching or the Science of Yoga, you discover that the point of meditation is to develop lots of ki energy. It's also called qi in Chinese or prana in Sanskrit, life energy, vita in Latin, etc., or anima. In any event, you're supposed to develop all of this ki energy and pack it down into these little containers, so to speak, that are within your energy body. And then when you die, you've got this energy with you that you can use over there, which you will not have if you do not do this. This is true of men. Again, I don't know about women. It's not possible for me to be able to say what the meditation experience is like for them because the physiology is part of it all. But let's start way out at the far reaches. First, let me stop and get a disclaimer going in here, rather to restate a disclaimer that I'll prepend. This talk has some discussions about meditative practices near its end. If you're listening to these, they may trigger them, so don't listen to this this discourse while you're driving. Whether you're operating cars, trucks, automobiles, airplanes, or spaceships, it's probably not a good idea to do that in a meditative state. In any event, so, to begin, universe started, and there was this great pulse. The pulse comes out, and it crashes into the edges of materium, turns on itself, and goes back in on itself. Nowadays, that pulse still continues. Now what occurs, though, is that 22 trillion times a second, this pulse comes from the absolute center of materium, goes to the center of universe instantaneously. It does not pass through time, because it's outside of time and space. The pulse then goes from the center of universe to the center of every galaxy, from the center of every galaxy to the center of every solar system and every other object that is within that galaxy. This is all happening instantaneously. This happens 22 trillion times a second. This pulse is what creates the materium in which we find ourselves. This pulse happens 22 trillion times a second, but the second is actually divided into 44 trillion parts, because in between each pulse, there is a period of no pulse. This is what the Taoists and the Buddhists and the yogic practitioners would refer to as the void. So you are on a planet, And like the planet and like the sun and every other thing, your body is created 22 trillion times a second as this pulse comes out of the middle of universe and zips around and crashes into itself and creates these giant standing waves of energy that are the sun and all the planets, all the dust, us, you know, all the fishes and the trees and the cockroaches and the dirt and everything. It's all created by these pulses. Now, there's the pause. 22 trillion times a second, there is a pause. During that pause, everything ceases to exist. If this did not occur, motion could not occur because all the atoms would be perpetual. Those standing waves would be 100% perpetual, and there would be no, quote, space for them to move within materium. Maybe someday we'll have a discussion about the actual mechanisms of that. In any event, to continue on with this idea, 44 trillion times a second, there is a division in your universe. If you could see that fast, if your eyes were not part of universe, and therefore created 22 trillion times a second and destroyed 22 trillion times a second, you could see this occurring. And there would be truly no need for meditation. Because meditation in the materium produces all kinds of effects. Its goal of compressing energy and so that you can take it with you is not a distraction from, nor does it preclude, using the effects of meditation within materium. So meditation provides benefits all the way around. It's not that it's just an end goal for when you die and thereafter. While you're alive, it produces a great deal of benefits as well. From the very minute you first start practicing meditation, you begin reaping the benefits of it. Now, those benefits within the materium are designed to allow your mind to upshift, if you will, higher into the 22 trillion times a second frequency that the creation part of the continuous creation destruction of universe actually involves. This upshifting is because your mind is really only working at like 40 to 60 frames a minute, as you would note from movies and other videos where you don't really have to have continuous motion in the film. If our brains are operating at such a slow rate, if you get 40 frames and you start shoving them fairly fast, we're going to see that, and our minds will imagine that we're actually seeing true continuous motion when none really exists. But in a sense, that's just exactly the same way universe works. Because universe is working at 22 trillion frames a second, which is so far beyond our ability to perceive that we not only think there's true motion, we actually think that things have a true solidity, that the wood next to you, the car you're in, you know, your feet are actually solid. Nothing could be further from the truth. They are really empty space, and the solidity is an illusion within your mind. That is another goal of meditation, is to get you to the point where these illusions begin to fall off. So, having stated that the goal of meditation is really to carry this energy for man in any event beyond death into the next realm so that you can do things, and within the materium, the benefits of meditation provide extra levels of power, health, longevity, less pain, the ability to control your mind, delusions fall away, you're able to work harder, more effectively, you're usually more at peace, and you're usually in a situation where you're less of a pain in the ass to the people around you because you are not actively participating in your own trauma of being in materium, but are actively participating in attempting to understand that trauma through meditation and to emerge from it. Bearing in mind, of course, that psychiatry, as an instance, uses talk therapy in which the mind attempts to analyze itself by chasing itself endlessly. Bearing in mind, it knows it's being chased, so it can always throw false trails around. Meditation is another approach to get at mind stuff by removing the mind. Now, meditation takes many different forms. It is entirely a form of mind control, although there are physical benefits from it and energetic benefits from it. But its real purpose is to understand what life is like with mind out of the way. Within materium. Its goal is to generate this energy, as one would find when one reads the Hui Ming Ching or the Science of Yoga, and the discussions of the various different forms of energy are found there. Let's also take a second and discuss these two books and others. The Hui Ming Ching, you can find a very good translation by Eva Wong on Amazon or in other spots online. Science of Yoga is a different kind of a book. It's rewritten periodically by different individuals, but they change nothing. The idea is to keep the book alive and going. And you'll find it by various different authors, and yet you'll check and see that indeed it is exactly the same publication. It's a little bit more daunting to track down the various different versions of it, but the text is all the same. In both cases, these books arise from traditions where science in the form of scientific method was used with experiments in the form of human beings as experiencers, the trained experiencers and trained reporters of those experiences were used to examine the material universe in which we find ourselves. This examination took place over the course of thousands of years, actually, because both of the books began as oral traditions, but over the course of hundreds of years of systematic study in the case of the Taoist, and probably close to 1,000 years of systematic study of the that led to the sutras that we call the Science of Yoga or the Patanjali sutras. Now, those, in both cases, the books are written in a very interesting style because the idea is to be absolutely brief and to repeatedly go over the books and use no extraneous words, because the idea of both of these books is to communicate a specific notion that is very difficult to communicate. And this is especially true when the mind is blinded by the delusions of the materium. So, we have these ancient books, the Hui Ming Ching and the Science of Yoga, date back thousands of years. The process is truly unknown as to when they originated and in the various forms they've been in. We have them in a fairly concrete state for a number of centuries now, and we can proceed with the knowledge base that they suggest to us exists. This knowledge base derives from the idea of examining the materium that we find ourselves in without the delusions that the materium wraps around our mind by being so in it. So it's a tricky kind of a situation. It's sort of like attempting to have your character in a video game explore the video game without you participating, if you think about it in that way, giving a character its own autonomous view and sitting back and watching what it learns. That's very much an analogy for what the process of meditation is supposed to involve within the materium. Now, the problem, of course, is getting the mind out of the way, and then further, finding the mind through the mass of delusions in order to get it out of the way. So, the various meditation schools came up with various different techniques, and they are generically or generally all of the same order of thinking. And the order of thinking goes as follows. An individual, a being within materium, has willpower the very first minute that they decide to use it and exercise it. And they do not have it until they exercise it. And once it's exercised, they can never lose it. So in other words, the minute you, in your mind, the millisecond you decide in your mind to get your butt off the couch, then you have the willpower to do so, and you merely need to place energy alongside that thought in order for that thought to manifest, which is your butt gets up off the couch. This is an interesting way of thinking about it, because we have to consider that you've actually spanned, in doing so, several seconds, each involving 44 trillion slices of your body being created and dissolved, creating and dissolved, in order for that motion to occur. Now, at the same time, the destruction of your body also involves the destruction of your physical brain. It doesn't exist 22 trillion times a second. But your mind does, and the mind persists Also, for instance, there is this idea of the persistence of human vision. Go look at the sun and close your eyes. If you look even for a few milliseconds, you'll have an after image. That after image is persisting, even though not only that you're not continuing to look at the sun, but also your eyeballs are being destroyed 22 trillion times a second. So it's an interesting concept to noodle on. And at its core is the idea of persistence of consciousness and consciousness. And let's just say at this point that it's okay for us to think about consciousness and willpower as being the same thing, and that both of those are separate from the mind. And the mind obviously is the vehicle or the house of the ego. We can get down into somebody else's definition of ego and all of that, but it doesn't really matter. The little chattery voice in your head that comes from the linguistic center of the mind, that part of the internal dialogue is all housed within the mind. It does not persist as a entity in the process of meditation. So in the process of meditation, if you can find the in a way to speak of it, the gap between things, then you can just find a space. And I'm using these words, and they've all got quotes around them, because obviously there's no space inside your meditative consciousness. There's no space in universe, but that's another subject entirely. Anyway, so the goal here is to find the gaps, really, and in meditation. And in doing so, you eliminate the chatter and you eliminate the mind from the process, and what remains is truly you. That is the expression of consciousness that you have shoved into the materium through the process of being born here. I'm assuming that everybody I'm talking to has been born here. That's not necessarily obvious. Others may be listening to this that weren't. In any event, so the meditative process is not exclusive. So in other words, you won't find a Taoist saying, oh yeah, my meditative process is the only way to be meditative, and every other meditative process is bogus, and they're all following false meditative processes and should be put to death. So meditation and meditative schools are not like religion. They don't throw their ego out there and strut it around and demand that everybody kiss it and kill all the other egos. The meditative process is designed to kill the ego at its core, and so a meditative process, by definition, any meditative school that comes on out and starts bragging and getting all uppity and saying we're the only path to meditation is by definition not on the path of meditation at all. And so you can just avoid those guys. Kind of is the approach I take with, like, Scientology. Every offense possible to Scientology. So let's continue with the meditative process, and we'll note a few things. This is not going to be an in-depth discussion. We could do hours on this. We're going to try and keep this to a reasonable amount of time in this particular episode of the Wujo, and just give an overview that we can give people things to research on. And then we'll come in and have further discussions on some of the other parts of it as we go along in other Wujo episodes. Meditation involves, at its core, oddly enough, your body, because your body is the physical vehicle of your delusion that reality exists and everything is solid. You think your body is solid, therefore we need to begin with that and eliminate the body as the issue. And you need to approach meditation with the idea that your body will be involved. Now, in the West, a lot of people think of meditation as the traditional little lotus seat posture or some variant like sitting seiza or that kind of thing. However, there are thousands of schools of meditation, millions maybe, and as it should be, because every human is different to some degree, every person's destiny is their own, every meditative process should be unique to that individual, as the goal is for that individual to gain this energy to take with them, and then also the benefits of attempting to gain that energy. Bear in mind, within the materium here, you could think that the idea of creating this energy and taking it with you is bullshit, but nonetheless, you'll enjoy tremendous benefits from doing the meditation. And at some point, you may come to understand that I'm correct about that, but that is not pertinent to our discussion. The meditation will help you out here, even if your goal is to enslave all mankind and be the monster of all monsters. Believe me, you'll never get there without having the ability to meditate and build up the energy that you'll need within the materium here to go and enslave all of mankind. Also, believe me, in the process of doing the meditation, you will no longer wish to have that goal. So this is good. Go and meditate. Now, let's get to the different types of meditation. There's all meditative processes involve the body. Various different schools will have you put your body into various different positions that they think cause certain conditions to exist within the mind-body matrix. They were correct for their founders, usually. See, this is my understanding. A lot of these meditative practices and body positions worked on the individual from whom that school takes their tradition. But it may not work on you. So if you're going to sit there and try and shove yourself into a lotus position, and you've got, as I do, wounds to various bits and pieces of your body that prevent your from really obtaining a lotus position, you're not going to be very successful in meditating. But the meditation, while it is body dependent, is not specific posture dependent. So you can't sit in a lotus position. Well, lotus position may be required for various schools of meditation, but it is not required for such things as Zen meditation, also known as Chan in the Chinese. It's not required in Ni Kung meditation. I really like Ni Kung. There's a lot of standing poses there that develop true strength for men and really develop the hips and the thigh muscles, just as an aspect of doing the meditation, which is important because you've got to be fit to take on this process. The process will make you fit as you go along, but it is also absolutely required that you be as fit as possible as you get to these latter stages. So, we get around the postures component of it. Various different schools will have your body in various different postures, so it's kind of a searching process. You've got to try the various different schools and their ideas of how you should be when you're meditating to see what fits with your body. And once you find one that fits, stay with it for a while. Go into the process and see if you can, you know, really get into sync with it and go along so far. But bear in mind, there's a general rule of meditation, and that is that the footstep that you take to start your path is not the footstep you're going to take to end your path. So there will be many changes along the way. And it is okay to start with one form of meditation, knowing that you will work through its benefits for you and discard it as your skills in the process grow. And so I personally started with this process in yoga. It was too deep for me. I had to back off and found, delved into Buddhism, looked into the small and great raft forms of Buddhism, ended up pursuing a thing called Vipassana meditation, which is for householders. This is a kind of meditation that's designed for people that have to do things like cook and wash dishes and go to work and you know, pay bills and all of that kind of crap. And it works very well. And it, at its core, is a saying, and it, there's a lot of for those ego-bound meditation schools, there's people that would cast dispersions on the school and everything. But let me point out a couple of things. No enlightened being has ever come out of any meditation school other than the householder school. In other words, nobody who became an enlightened being got there by being a dedicated Buddhist and sitting in the monastery for years and years and years and years. Yes, that will take you a great deal, and you will become very advanced in all of the techniques, but you must acknowledge that all of the great enlightened beings that hit the path on the planet and then walked around and talked about it and were able to demonstrate this thing were basically amateurs that proceeded on the path on their own, absent a school around them. And actually, from most of these beings, we have schools of thought that have arisen that have become somewhat codified and solidified and so on, and actually produce all the monasteries that keep all these traditions alive. And they're good things, but they do not produce the enlightened beings that start the traditions off. So at its core, it's true. Small raft Buddhism, which is personal form of meditation and enlightenment, signified frequently by the saying, if you meet the Buddha on the road, kill him, because he's an obstacle to your own personal enlightenment. And they don't mean him, you know, that you got to actually do away with his body or anything. In any event, but you know, don't get hung up on it, because everything that you, you know, every Buddha that is on in the path between you and your ultimate goal is an obstacle and part of the delusions between you and them. And you just have to get them out of the way. Yeah, they're good guys. Yeah, they're enlightened, but it doesn't do a whole lot for you. If you're going to do the work, they are in the way of it, of your particular pattern of growth and suffering and work that you've got to go through. So, getting back to the meditative process, there's a couple of things that you're really going to want to look at when you start doing meditation and get into it, and that is how you position the sacrum. And I'm not going to go into that. I'll probably do a whole half hour on talking about the sacrum as it relates to martial arts and how you walk and posture and everything else. But if you want to get into the real mystery of life, why did they name that particular bone in your body that particular word, sacrum? Go and look it up. Go and look at the shape of the bone and see what it does. It's a transmitter of nerves and a container of all these little nerve holes and does some pretty cool stuff. Anyway, so this is a limited introduction to the various forms of meditation, and let's divert for a second and consider health and all of that kind of stuff as it relates to meditation. The story goes that Shakyamuni gets up one day, goes and he sits under a tree, and he gets enlightened, you know, cut to the chase kind of a story here, many years involved, and he becomes the Buddha. And he goes walking around and he tells a couple of people, actually it's only, in the whole story there's only once that he actually states to any individual, and this was another individual he met on the road who was actually another individual seeking enlightenment, and he said basically, yo dude, hey, I made it, I'm enlightened, I discovered the original source of every damn thing and I know what I'm doing. And the other guy looked at him and says, yeah, right, the other day I saw you swimming in the mud in that stream, you know, so I'm going to go follow my own path. Anyway, though, the ability of the body to withstand the rigors that are demanded in the meditative process demands that those people that are true to that process and are not dilettantes trios are not really just checking it out, see if it's for them. But if you're really on the path, you'll find that the path must change your physical body. And those parts of the process are to be expected, however onerous and demanding they may be on your life. You've just got to go with it. Because the body itself is an expression of that vehicle that you're using, which is the materium, the little bit of consciousness within the materium, to reach for the larger consciousness, and it will demand a great deal of your body. So the sooner you get onto the key exercises idea, that is the idea that there are specific exercises that you can do, not jumping jacks or that kind of thing, but that there are specific exercises that you can do that will, within your physical body, also assist in generating key as a direct component of that exercise, then the faster your meditative process will progress, because the key energy is directly connected to that process. Not only is the goal of meditation to gain key energy and compress it and hold it within these vehicles that the Chinese call the Dan Dian, that are somewhat aligned in their system with the chakra system from yoga, but you need in the process of doing the meditation, you need a certain amount of key energy to start. That's why when I can't think of Bodhidharma, when he goes to the Shaolin temple the first time, he finds all these people that are, you know, basically emaciated and not very fit, and he's all disgusted with them. He's just walked in from India, bear in mind, so he's in pretty good shape. Mostly he walked there eating native grasses along the way and such root crops and fruits as the universe decided to provide to him. And he's an exceptionally fit individual. And he's a Bodhidharma, which is a Buddha who's enlightened and stays on the planet to go help out all of the rest of us guys. And so you know, and basically, by the way, if you ever run into these people, you'll find that the first thing that they usually do is slap you upside the head, get your attention. And that's what he did with the Shaolin Temple. He went on in and found all these emaciated guys and said, hey, dudes, this is really bogus. We can't have this. You're never going to make any kind of an enlightened or a serious effort at getting enlightenment with these puny little vehicles that you've got hanging around here. And I'm not talking like you got to take steroids and try to be Schwarzer or be the Gubernator, what you've got to end up doing is to refine your body and work towards something that is specific to your body type, but is the absolute essence, the refined essence of what you can do. Probably the only person on the planet that I've ever seen physical evidence, or ever seen evidence that you could go and look at, which would be on YouTube or something, of a person who has gotten really close to that body type, is Bruce Lee. He had refined everything that was not part of that body type and removed it away and purified it to his essence. There are many people, millions, that have done so, but usually they are not in a position where we find out about them. So we don't usually know about these individuals, but they do exist. Any event, so we're going to terminate here fairly quick with this. I've got other chores that must get to. So do not be surprised if the path makes demands on your body. The sooner you accept this and start getting fit as an aspect of meditation, the sooner everything progresses. You'll find that the various forms of martial arts that are true arts, in the Japanese traditions, they usually end those with the word do, judo, aikido, that kind of thing. You'll also find that in taekwondo, hapkido in the Korean traditions. In the Chinese traditions, it's a little bit less definitive, but most of those traditions are based from the Shaolin Temple and Kung Fu, which at its core has what's known as the internal arts. Kung Fu, by the way, does not mean martial art. Martial art in Chinese is actually wushu. In any event, though, these martial arts, as a at their core, provide qi building exercises or qi building exercises. So any of these would be most excellent to take as a augmenting lifestyle change for your meditative practice. Aikido is really good. They have a qi building a series of exercises that are done as part of the dojo. Tai Chi is good. Yoga is good. Lots of the various forms of Kung Fu are good. I don't know about such things as Pilates and that kind of thing. I've never done those, so I can't really speak to whether or not they're going to assist you. So just quickly to bring us to a little bit of a conclusion here, I will go into detail on some of the actual things I've discovered doing meditation for 30-plus years and all of the stuff I've learned as a result of Aikido and martial arts, but that's another discussion entirely. Probably there could be like 3 or 4 hours on this, I imagine. We could spend hundreds of hours, but I don't know that there's any real point, nor do I have that kind of time. But Vipassana is a type of meditation that exists both in Buddhism and in yoga that's for householders. Meditation practice that I really like is Nikung. It's an internal Chinese practice, and you can do it standing up. So it works for all different kinds of situations. Basically, you're going to be working at removing the mind and the delusions that overlays on your life. This is a good thing, but do not be surprised to find that your personality changes and all aspects of your life change as a result of meditation. And that's one of the things that tells you right in the beginning of the Science of Yoga book, that if you proceed beyond this, you will be altered by this process. And I don't know that they put that in the Hui Ming Ching because the translation I've got doesn't include it. But the Taoists were very much aware that this was a self-selecting, self-changing process, the idea of meditation, and once you get into it and where it leads you from there. Many people become seduced by some of the more obvious benefits of meditation, you know, good posture, calm in the face of otherwise anxiety-producing circumstances around you, longer lifespan, that kind of a deal. And then in the process of meditation, you realize, oh, geez, this is a whole lot of work, and there's this hidden goal at the end that I wasn't really quite aware of when I started. And it gives you some really interesting perspectives on the materium and what's going on around us. But it also provides some ability to do serious thinking, because in the process of destroying the mind to get it out of the way, you learn to control it. We'll go into aspects of that later. Probably the best thing to do for starting meditation, I think, is to understand that you're going to have a bit of a trial and error process. You will fail repeatedly, and that is your goal initially. You want to find those types of meditation that don't work for you the way that Edison wanted to find those ways not to make light bulbs. So try them. And as soon as you realize that, oh, this isn't going to work, not a little bit of pain or something like that, you have to understand that you got to get tough. Meditation is not easy. If it were easy, every couch potato would be there. They're not meditating. They're entrained. They're hypnotized, and their brains are being shifted into this other state that is actually the opposite of meditation. Meditative state is in no way like the entrainment you get off of the TV, especially with the high-definition flashy light approach they've got going now. Meditation is the opposite of that impact on your brain. So, you got some real work ahead of you. It's really interesting, and it produces huge benefits, but basically, in spite of every one of the failures you will encounter for the next foreseeable future, do not be discouraged. Each of the failures is a point of progress and pride along the way. You can say, oh, I did TM, you know, it was good, but it didn't provide what I got from yoga, and yoga didn't provide what I got from Vipassana, and Vipassana didn't provide what I got from Ni Kung, and so on. And just being able to say that you've made that progression to yourself, if no one else, is at least showing to yourself the progress towards the goal. I hate to use these words. Once you get into meditation, you'll understand why progress is just not really a fitting word for what you're going to discover. Good luck, and what do we say? Big key forward. Even though you're not really going anywhere, you're going to sit still in a non-space, non-time environment. It's really worth doing for the planet. It's probably the hardest word out there, and I think most people would acknowledge the truth of my words that if the 7 billion people on our planet today spent half an hour meditating, there would be no way the powers that be could force war on any of us. Thank you.